And it is April 30th, 2022. I'm here with Jerry Douglas, and we are on the campus of Wilkes Community College at Merlefest. So, Mr. Douglas, will you just start off by telling, for anyone who might not know who you are, telling them a little bit about yourself and your music?
Okay. My name is Jerry Douglas. I'm originally from Northeast Ohio, Warren, Ohio, and started playing bluegrass music. It's probably the first music I ever heard. Was probably bluegrass music, and it was probably Flatten Scruggs. But my father had a bluegrass band, so I grew up hearing the music live and watching his band work up songs, arrangements, and do things like that. You know, that something that really became very important to me later in life as a record producer, as an arranger, and all these kind of things. You know, I kind of got a good view of that way early in life, what it's like, you know, how you do this kind of thing. But I play the dobro guitar. Dobro guitar is a dobro, first of all, is a shortened name for Dopiera brothers, who immigrated to the United States in the early 20s. And first thing they did was create the National Steel Guitar in Chicago. And they moved from there to California and started building wooden-bodied instruments of the same kind. And at the same period, there was a Hawaiian music craze running through the country because Hawaii had just been adopted as, you know, a foreign our territory for us, much like Puerto Rico is, I guess. But it was before Hawaii was a state, way before. But there was this huge craze for the music going through this whole country, and guys were going door to door selling little kids Hawaiian guitar lessons. They'd give you this little guitar, and then they'd come back every week and give you another lesson. But dobro is played flat, and it's got a hubcap on the top of it. If you think of Dire Straits, Brothers in Arms, I tell people to think about it. That's the metal version. I play the wooden version. And so I've been playing that since I was 11 years old, so I'm 66 almost in a month. I'll be 66. So I've been playing for 50 years.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, I've done a little bit of research myself, being a blues fan, and know that there's a lot of cross thread with the Hawaiian, you know, guitar and blues musicians back in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah, that's why a lot of the blues players took dobro guitars, because they were loud enough. Their voice didn't cover up their guitar
right.
So much.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. So in terms of our questions, if you have one, can you share a favorite memory or two of the festival, or the Watson family, or both?
Probably both. I was friends with Doc Watson before the festival. We had met, we had played on stages together. And, you know, the first time I heard Doc Watson, though, was on a Flatten Scruggs record, of course, strictly instrumental, and Doc just blew everyone's mind. And I was a little kid, and I just thought, oh, my goodness, wouldn't it be wonderful to play with that guy someday? And I finally got a chance to, you know, and he became a good friend of mine. But there's so many, you know, one of my favorite memories of, I'll just say, with Doc, and it didn't happen here because we were on the road, but this festival did exist at that point, but there was a book called In the Country of Country. And they did an article on, they wrote a whole chapter on Doc Watson. And I got to read that to Doc after the book came out. We were backstage waiting to go on, and I read the whole chapter to Doc and asked him, just making sure, is this right? You said this? This is true? You said this? You know? And he said, yep, that's right. That's right. He said, if I'd have been a car mechanic, I would have put in just as much labor and work and time as I do with this guitar. And he said, I would have tried to be the best car mechanic I could be.
Great.
Now I'm trying to be the best guitar player I can be.
Oh, what a great story! Yeah.
But you know, that'll never leave me. But I was friends with Rose Lee, such a sweet, sweet woman, and I've so many times looked over, been on stage and looked over to my right, and Rose Lee would be sitting in one of those rocking chairs over there. Mm-hmm. And just smile, just give you that smile, you know, just melt you. And this was the first festival that I could bring my family to. And I have four children. They've all been here at various ages, from four to grown, you know. And I have memories of you know, my son Patrick as a little blonde-haired kid with his baseball cap on backwards, running around and taking his, and you know, Del McCurry grabbing him up or something, and we take a picture, you know, and we just, you know. And now Patrick works at the he's the head of video and photography for Opryland production, so he does all the Circle 3 stuff that happens at the Opry, and he knows so many people that come in there. Yeah. You know, yeah. And just raising my kids up in this music, in this business, this was the first place we would come every year and this is where you found out who had more kids, how many more kids you got. I'm almost afraid to ask you, are you still married? You know, those kind of questions, because it was the first time we'd meet in the new year.
Yeah.
And get out and play like this, and made this festival really special. That it was always the first stop of the big trail for the summer.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that. And that is a perfect lead into the next question. And maybe you've already answered it. I don't know, but I'll ask anyway. Why do you think it is a homecoming or a family reunion for both the fans and the musicians?
Yeah, but I did touch on that. I mean, it's the first place we see each other, and we, you know, there's a new baby. There's a new bus, there's a new band member, there's a new, you know, there's all these things. And this is the first place we get to check up on each other and see how everybody's wintered. Yeah, but it is, that's what makes this festival very, very special, is the first.
Yeah.
It's the first of the year.
Do you feel like that happened organically, or do you think Doc had some sense of that when this started, like that might happen?
Well, he may have had some idea about how that, you know, that this is such a part of renewal every year.
Yeah.
This time of year, this is when this country and this the background for the stage and this whole area goes from gray to green, you know, mm-hmm. and all the buds come out and everybody's sinuses go crazy. but it's a beautiful place, and I can't help but, you know, take my hat off to B. Towns for all the work that he did with Doc in the first, you know, from the first mention of something happening here for Merle, for the garden for the blind. That's why we all came here in the first place, because we all knew Merle and Doc, and we wanted to do something, anything. We didn't know what to do, so this is what we did.
Yeah.
And it's become, you know, I think so much more than they ever thought. Sure. Could have ever been.
Yeah, you're perfectly segueing into every question. Thank you. That is awesome. So,
I'm not trying.
No. I know, but this is great. So you're making my job easier. Can you talk a little bit about that first year and kind of how you got involved with the festival? I mean, it sounds like you had a great relationship with the Watsons beforehand, but and then, you know, even thinking back to your first performance or performances here, can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I came here with Newgrass Revival. I played with them the night before at Green Acres, a little place outside of, over in Western Carolina. And it was just a wild, crazy club. You know, you go in, there were sofas and all these kind of things. And it was just a wild place. But I went that weekend. I knew we were coming here, and I was invited to be here. And so I just went with them to Green Acres, and we just had this wild, wild night the night before. And then we come rolling into here in their converted bread truck as a bus. You know, we come rolling in here, and I'll fall out of it and get up on stage. And Tony was here. Tony Rice was here, and Chet Atkins and Earl Scruggs and Marty Stewart and Grandpa Jones and. I think, was Dwayne Eddy here too?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure about Dwayne. Somebody was playing a big hollow body electric, but I don't remember who that was. But it was amazing for all of us to be standing up there at the same time, you know, and I'm thinking about where I was the night before, which was just like the opposite of where I am right now. It just feels like church. The audience wasn't that big, but it showed promise, you know, and that's all they wanted. That's all they wanted. We were all kind of rolled up in here for free and did the thing. And had fun playing. I played with everybody that day. I don't think there was anybody that went up on the stage that I didn't play with that day. It was the same for everybody. We were all happy to see each other. It was a bunch of friends, and we come together for one of the best reasons, you know, possible. So it was a win-win situation for everybody.
Yeah, thank you. So what makes performing here special year after year, and why do you keep coming back year after year?
This place is just in my blood now. As long as I can perform, I hope to come back here and play at this festival. When I came here, I was, you know, 30 years old. Now I'm 66 years old, so we've grown up here, and this is sort of like we're like salmon. We don't come back here to die, but we come back to the to a place that feels safe and secure, and we know what to expect, and we know that everyone is going to treat us with the utmost care and friendship, and then on top of all of that, we get to see each other and talk and have conversations that we haven't been able to have, you know, in a year, maybe. We usually see each other here, then we'll see each other in Telluride, then we'll see each other at Rocky Grass or Strawberry, and you know it goes on like that, but. Those are giant festivals. Those are huge festivals. You know, festivals that pull in, you know, 75,000 to, you know, 100,000 people in a weekend, and a lot of people see you. And it's a huge card to have in your. It's a great arrow to have in your quiver. I'll say that. It's a good calling card. If you've played Merlefest is, you know, some people aspire to just get on the Merlefest stage one time and that's it. That'll be it for them. They don't care. It's just, and it's that kind of place to everybody that comes here after they see the shows and everything. You know, I can imagine kids, you know, watching us play and just thinking, you know, I want to be up there someday. And I think that's what brings us back here. Because we see our own children grow up here, because it's that kind of place we can bring them. And families, you know, rotate in and out. Buses, musicians, you know, fads, trends, hairstyles. Oh, my God. I hope no one does a hairstyle mashup for me, because I had them all. But we all went through so much, and we grew up, but we grew up here.
Thank you. Did the festival performing here year after year impact your career in any way?
I'm sure it did. I mean, this is also a very good place to network, you know, and record deals are struck here. I struck a managerial deal here on a handshake that lasted until, you know, I lost the fella. But, yeah, it has. I mean, to belong to the belonged to the Merlefest family, and it definitely does add a link to the chain.
Gotcha. Thank you. Are there any particular rituals or traditions that you do around this time of year, either leading up to the festival, during, or after?
Well, the trip in here is beautiful. I like to drive here from Nashville. I had to fly last night, but I tried getting a ride with everybody in the band, and they all had somebody with them. They wouldn't bring me. So I flew in, and my tour manager picked me up last night at the airport in Charlotte and brought me in. But the drive in here, you know, coming through from Nashville, coming toward the Cumberland Plateau, and then going down through the gorge, past Knoxville and through the gorge, is where you get that feeling that you're a very small thing here, and then it doesn't let up. The beauty just keeps coming. You know, it's just the Smoky Mountains, and you pass through that. Get down on the other side of the Smokies and then fall into the Piedmont. You know, it's a very geographical place. And I like the drive. All the pretty flowers in the middle of the road. I mean, I'm a musician. I'm on the road all the time. I travel mostly at night. But when I can see what this country of ours looks like, it's amazing. It's amazing what all we have here. And just to open your eyes once in a while. But this, the drive over here and then into an area that was once the furniture maker capital of the world, you know, and everything that's happened since, you know, business has fallen out and then COVID hits us. It hasn't been easy on the area. It's impacted the area. Sure. But you know what? The people that show up, everybody I've talked to today, they had a huge smile on their face, and they were happy to be here, and I was just as happy to see them. This festival gives us a chance to have a really good conversation with the people who are out there listening to us all the time, with the fans, whatever you want to call them. Kind of don't like to call them fans. It's always seemed like a weird term to me.
You're the second person that said that, actually.
Really?
Yes.
Well, it really is. So many of them are friends, you know. They walk away as a friend, you know. But this business is also, there's also the flip side of that is you might meet somebody who you just like, you know, all of a sudden there are sparks. I mean, not in any relationship kind of way. It's just like any interest. You might hit a common interest just in passing. And you might stand there and talk to that person for 5 minutes straight about that and have the greatest conversation about that. And then you'll never see them again. And that's the flip side of all of that. I mean, we do that every day. You know, and that's, I don't like that. You know, I would like for those things to continue, but they don't. They just can't.
Yeah.
And that's one of the only negative things about being a traveling musician. I've veered completely off subject.
That is okay. That is okay. I am okay with that. You mentioned earlier in your response to that question, you mentioned COVID. And that has come up a little bit in these interviews, and I'm kind of curious to hear the year, I guess it would have been 2020, did you, that weekend that you would have been here, did you do anything that weekend to commemorate not being at Merlefest? Or, I know some people, one person mentioned that, I forget the person who organized a Zoom sort of event, did you participate in that? Okay.
Yeah, when COVID struck, you know, it was so, the first festival, you know, of the year we knew was not going to happen, and that was really sad. But then somebody came up with the idea, let's do a Zoom of the festival, and anybody can, like, we'll show this later, we'll show this Zoom of everybody playing together or talking, at least talking to each other, at least we'll bring up the subject of Merlefest, and we'll have our own little Merlefest, even though we can't get together this year. Let's do the best we can with what we have to work with. And at that time, Zoom was it. And So we worked on that. I do remember doing that, and quite a few festivals did it because there was no festival that year. I mean, we were shut down as musicians. We were completely shut down. We could not play to an audience. Didn't matter how big it was, and that lasted for maybe a year and a half. And but I have a studio, so I was able to work from the studio, and I did some Facebook, Instagram, Flux Fridays, I called them. Mm-hmm. And I would come on live onto those every Friday at about 1 o'clock or something like that, and play for half an hour, just talk and play and clown, be a clown, and just, you know, I mean, I did that all the way through. I did it from March to December. Mm-hmm. And then I started running out of things to do. and by then everything was shifting as well. You know, the whole world was stopped turning. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to work. So I did probably 40, 50 records during COVID. Yeah. And just locked in my studio, doing everything myself and sending them back out, you know, and now they're records.
Right.
But it was a tough period, and knowing that, you know, Merle Fest was the first casualty for us, and that's a big one. Mm-hmm. That's a very big one, and it also, it's big in financially, you know. Sure. For some bands, this was their big deal. You know, they were bringing out their new band, they were going to bring it out, they were just going to wow the audience with it. Boom, COVID, canceled.
Yeah.
You know, all your dreams and hopes and everything you think dashed. I hope not. You know, I hope everybody hung on, got better.
Yeah.
And they're here now, and they're doing even better than they thought they would.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was tough. It was tough for musicians, and it's still tough.
Sure.
It's still tough. And we're all, you know, this year really kind of like, you know, here we are at Merlefest, real Merlefest. Mm-hmm. We're doing what we did in 2018.
Yeah.
1998.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I've certainly gotten some sense of this as you've been talking, but can you just again describe your relationship with Doc and the festival, sort of that relationship, and how has it evolved, I guess, over the years as well?
Well, I heard first, you know, I heard Doc Watson first on a Flatten Scruggs record.
Yeah.
I mentioned that before.
Yep.
And I met Doc, the first time I met Doc, he and Merle were playing at a place called Smithville, Virginia, and it was one of the hottest stages any of us had ever been on, because it had a tin roof, and it was about 108 in the shade. And I remember Doc out there just sweating, you know, and he'd take that one arm up and his forearm, wipe his brow, and bring his pick back down and start right into another song, man. That cat, it nothing bothered him. And Merle too, and then I met Merle backstage. Doc did a couple by himself, and I walked up on the back of the stage, and there was Merle, and we stood there and talked, you know, while Doc was out doing his thing. And what a nice guy, man. Merle was a really nice fellow. We were just talking a while ago. Merle was 37. He died, you know. And then I was, you know, then I think, if I think about that, you know, I was 37 here. I turned 37 here. And so, what, you know, that's an odd place to go, but it's just he should have been here too, you know. He should have been here too to, you know, maybe none of this would have even happened if it hadn't been for him and whatever, what happened. But he should have been here with us. He would have been hanging in here with, having a great time with everybody. You know, he's just like us. He's just like us.
Yeah, I asked that of us, another musician, sort of, what do you, since you knew him fairly well, what do you think he would have thought of all this, Merle? What do you think he would have thought? Because this is certainly, I think, like you alluded to this earlier, this is sort of organically grown beyond a lot of people's, they wouldn't have expected this in 1988, right? What we have today.
No, we were just trying to pay for a garden. That's all. And it turned into all these buildings. And and you know, this beautiful campus. But I think if Merle was here, he would be laughing his ass off. If he could see what's going on here, and you know, knowing that this was started all about him and his daddy wanting to create this garden, I think Merle would think it. I don't think he would think it was funny. I think it would really be a cheerful thing for him. I think it would be a great thing for him. He would love the idea, you know. I mean, he's done so much for people who never met him, you know. Yeah. And that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good when you can put on an event like this and make so many people happy, change so many people's lives, and give them something to do to take their minds off of all the stuff that we endure day in and day out and the news and all this crazy stuff, you know, to come here and just forget all about it. Just go to a completely nice, your safe spot, you know. And if he knowing that, he would be extremely happy.
Well, I want to circle back to Doc for a second. Do you remember the last festival that Doc performed at, and do you remember the first festival after Doc's death? And can you share about each of those experiences, if there's anything that stands out to you about those times?
The last year that Doc was here, we all played as much as we could with him. We just kind of made a pact that we would do that, and we did every chance we got. And he was on stage all the time. You couldn't get rid of him. And I don't know if he knew. I don't know what was going on, but or maybe he was going to retire. I don't know. But when I came back here the next year, knowing Doc wasn't going to be here, it was different. It felt different to me that I wasn't going to see Doc Watson. When I pulled up in the backstage area, I wasn't going to see that Scott Rouse and Dr. Rouse and helping Doc Watson get to his room in the back of the stage, where he held court all day long. It was great. I remember taking James Taylor back there to meet him because I thought this is the only chance that they're going to have, and I just introduced them. Watch them shake hands, and I left. You know, let these guys talk. And because I'm sure James owed so much to Doc, and he was able to tell him. And they had played together, I think, once before, but not in a situation like this. That's another thing. It's great for us, for all of us that have been here so many times to introduce people to Doc. And that year, we couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. Doc wasn't there. Changed everything. I mean, the festival went on just the same as it is today. But man, I miss it. You know, I'd be out there on stage playing. There'd be a whole line of us playing, and Doc would say, "Take it, Jerry." And I didn't even know that he knew I was there. You know. I found out later it was T. Michael was giving him hints, but to me it was amazing. I'd just be doing nothing, you know, and all of a sudden I'd hear Doc say, "Take it, Jerry." It's like, oh my God, okay, I'll do it. I'll do whatever you ask. And one time Doc and I did a 501 jeans commercial, commercial together, and Doc flew in to Nashville, and I went to Nashville to pick him up. Mm-hmm. I had never led a blind person before, and asked Sam Bush about his.
He told me yesterday.
Did he?
Yes, he did. He told me that story.
Yeah. Well, I didn't do that. I didn't walk him into anything, but he, we're just goofy musicians, you know, but we're leading this icon around in the airport and then taking him out, putting him in the car, and he said, "Where can I get a good cheeseburger?" And I took him to the best cheeseburger place I could think of, Brown's Diner in Nashville, Tennessee. It's just a little hole in the wall, but it's what Doc would like. This would take him back to 1950, you know?
Yeah.
And he loved it. He had it all over him. He had it all over his face. But he cleaned it all up, and we did the jeans commercial the next day, and by then B had driven in, and he took over the getting him from place to place, because I got into the hotel room and made sure he knew where everything was, and of course he did. Yeah. And it was a thrilling experience, though. I can tell you, if you've never done it, you know, much less be Doc Watson. But I felt like part of the family too. I went to dinner one time with Earl Scruggs and Doc, and I'd never seen anybody eat so fast, because these guys are really old road dogs. I mean, they could get through a meal quick, because they got to get back on the road.
Yeah.
So I'm just like starting to take like the first bite of my sandwich, and I see their plates are okay. I'll just wrap this up.
Oh yeah, that's funny. Thank
but
you.
But who gets to do that? Yeah. You know, it's like charmed life.
Yeah,
that's what I got.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Well, we've reached the end. The final question is you've shared a lot today. Is there anything else relevant to the conversation or the theme of our questions that you want to share with us?
You know, I only thing I can say is, and it's an observation over the years, and once you get past 10, it doesn't matter. You know, 30 is just a number, because each one of the times I've been here has been its own memory, but they're all stacked up in there right now, and here I am at Merlefest again, so I'm making a new one. But the festival, the way this festival was run from the beginning, was a very, very well planned out thing. And festivals are usually thrown together by four or five drunk guys in a band who decide, hey, we should start a festival. Does anybody have any money? Of course they don't. But the biggest festivals are, you know, they pull in sponsors. Like this festival has always been smart, forward thinking, had a sponsor. You know, they've been different ones over the years, and now there's one that's very good, and they're great to the facility here. They're great to the festival. And I think that's what I take away from, in the larger sense, in the business sense of all of this. This is one of the most well-run festivals in the world. A lot of volunteers here, but a lot of people who put other years in here, who know how things work and how things don't work, how to make things run smooth, how to grease the wheels, how to not be forceful with people, not have too much of a law enforcement, you don't feel like you're being watched ever, you know, or anything like that. There's no sense of anxiety about anything here. This is, if you have anxiety, come to Merlefest, you'll never have it again.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, I wonder if that family atmosphere, the lack of, you know, alcohol, things like that, if that contributes to that.
I think, you know, the fact that Doc didn't drink, you know, Merle did, Doc didn't, Rose Lee surely didn't, but but they were Christian people who wanted a festival that reflected their the way they are, you know, was a reflection on them. And I think they did a wonderful, wonderful job of it, because you don't see anybody out here. You don't see fights. You don't see people, you know, and part of that is because they're not forced. They don't feel forced in any way to do anything. Yeah. It's just a big old family gathering. And it has become that over the years, you know, all these people, the different generations of, you know, I've met kids here that, you know, were kids of their mother or father was a kid here too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that's a strange one.
That has come up a lot, though. Yes, that has come up a lot, sort of people watching their kids grow up and the kids are coming, you know, so it's that has certainly been a theme of a lot of these interviews.
Yeah, I've seen lots. I know lots of kids here and watched them grow up and watched them have their own families now. It's I never thought I'd ever be talking about anything like that in my life. You know, I'm a musician. I'm just a rogue. But this is a very nice, peaceful, secure place. And it's just a happy time.
Well, considering the polarized world that we live in, it does. You're right. You make a good point. It seems like almost like a Garden of Eden away from sort of the crazy times, you know, that we find ourselves.
I felt like that was our job. It's our job to take them away from whatever it is that's just, you know, almost driven them here. Yeah. You know, they couldn't stand it, and they get here, and they hope they're not going to hear nobody, you know, go into their political side or anything. And sometimes, you know, this is a big place, and this is a place where you can do that. Mm-hmm. You can do that, and God bless you if you're on the right side. But, you know, we're musicians, we're not politicians. Mm-hmm. We have our different forums where we can be politicians.
Sure.
And we get slammed for that too, though.
Yeah.
You know, go play the dobro.
Right.
You know, shut up and play the dobro. Well, I have opinions. I'm a musician, so I have a place I can do that. This festival just feels good. It feels good out there. You know, it doesn't feel like there's any war going on. You know, that's just life or death anywhere else. It's they're here for one reason. They're here to have fun, and that fun is coming through, you know, their ears.
Yeah.
You know, and we're trying to give it to them.
Great.
We're just trying to take all that away.
Yeah.
For the time being.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that. Well, that's it. Thank you so much, Mr. Douglas. Let me stop the recording and.